Hello to our listeners. This is Marcia Epstein with Talk With Me on LawrenceHits.com, and that means I am based in Lawrence, Kansas, but my guests can be lots of places as long as technology cooperates. And I think it's especially important to fill ourselves with art. I don't know how it is for each of you listeners and your people in your personal world, but I've kind of seen a lot of challenges for a lot of people who I care about, and I've found myself being a little out of sync in a way that I'm not used to. And so that means I need to do good things for myself to get myself sort of recalibrated. I need my reset button to be pressed a few more times. And one of the ways that I like to do that is by walking barefoot in nature. Yeah, that's one. Another is by talking and reading and communicating, by experiencing art in different ways. So regular conversations, as well as listening to people read writing that they have carefully crafted. And so today I bring you the treat of somebody who I heard for the first time in person at the Raven Bookstore in Lawrence, Kansas. And one of the things that was important to me about this person's work when I heard it was that there was some levity there too. And it was at a time when I needed that, and I appreciated that. And then since, in kind of following this person with projects that are going on that I get to know and get to do shows with people who are part of it and all that kind of stuff, one of the things that I've noticed about this person that to me is very special and is a characteristic in common with those who are my most favorite writers is that this is a person who is a big believer in community and elevating other writers, encouraging, spreading the word, those kinds of things. And so I'm thrilled today to get to do this show with a poet, a writer, an artist, a last projectionist, a robot collector, who knows what all else, based in Kansas City, Brandon Whitehead. Hey, Brandon, welcome.
Marcia, how are you?
I'm good, except I'm just kind of dizzy lately. I don't know.
Yeah. I know the feeling. And just to Marcia's listeners out there, and she's had a whole lot of people from the Kansas City Poetry Throwdown we had this last April on her show, which has been great because she has really sort of given them, you know, another outlet, because, you know, poets, we just don't get to talk enough. And but she gave me at the Lawrence Poetry Reading a bag of goodies from, was it Wolfgang?
Wolfgang Karstens of Epic, yes. Rights Press, yes.
Yes, and those went into these what I called swag bags we gave to all these out-of-town poets. If you don't know about the Kansas City Poetry Throwdown, it was a three-day poetry reading at Prospero's Books. We had 50 poets from across the country, New York, Dallas, Denver, L.A., Portland, Topeka, from across the country, and it was the biggest event we've ever done through Spartan Press, our local press, Prospero's Books, and just the group, the entity we call the Throwdown, which is a small group of poets and writers that I've known many of them for many years. They're pains in the butt. No, we spent about 8 months putting this together with the sole goal. I mean, I'm coming up to 20 years here of writing poetry and reading, and you know, I've loved and cherished my memories of it, but there was also this acknowledgement that, you know, I've read at little town fairs on a stage made out of pallets at 8 in the morning. I have read at an illegal strip club at midnight. I have read in an alley where I was seriously in danger of being run over by baby strollers.
The killer baby strollers.
Yeah, you know, so the goal here was, because, you know, we're asking people, we did get some funding to pay some of the travel costs, but most people came on their own dime. And we're asking them to come here to Kansas City, that they, many of them had never been to before, for 3 days, for maybe 2 8-minute slots to read, you know. And so that's asking a lot. And I know the same thing. I've driven, you know, if I drive an hour to go someplace to read and the event's 4 hours long and I get 1 5-minute slot, well, it is what it is, you know. And of course, the meeting of, you know, between poets and writers and readers is really literally more fun than that 5 minutes. You get up, you do your thing, you get out, you know, and because you want to talk to these people and you want to meet these people. But we wanted to at least make it organized and, you know, be indoors, and there's a bathroom people can use, and just, you know, just try and make something that the people would appreciate. And I think they did, and they had a great time. One of the biggest hits was Jason Prue, who was one of the group, the throat group. He basically sat on his laptop for 15 hours recording all of these poets. And the goal was originally to live stream it. Well, that didn't, you know, and I was, you know, a lot of these people, you know, Jeanette Powers with massive, you know, powers behind the scene, getting things organized. You know, I basically put out chairs and played with the volume knob on the PA for, you know, to try and make it sound as good as I can. But everything that I tried to do started out at plan A and ended up somewhere around plan F. And and I knew that would happen. But, you know, so we couldn't live stream. The Wi-Fi was just the bandwidth, I'm going to make up a word I think that's right for that, wasn't good enough. And so Jason literally sat there, recorded on a hard drive, took the hard drive, put the person's name on it, did a quick edit of it, and then downloaded it onto the website, onto the Facebook page. So it was there in about 10, 15 minutes. He did this for 15 hours. Uh-huh. But I mean, and we just thought that would be nice. People would have a nice record of it. But in fact, most of these videos, and again, there's almost 50 videos, hundreds of views, because it'll let people from, you know, if you're from Buffalo, you can't, you know, your family can't see your performance, but they can watch that video.
Cool, but, yeah.
The coolest thing about it, though, was, and I've done this, and I talked to you the first time I talked to you about how I don't like going on the radio, and it's for it's for two main reasons. Number one, I can't cuss.
Yeah, you can. I let you. I promise.
I know. I can on your show, and I love that. Fuck. It's great. But the other thing is, you're just reading to silence. You know, there's no noise before. You read the poem, and then there's just this pause, and the person's like, wow, thanks. You know, there's no... Yeah. you want feedback. I've yet to meet a poet that doesn't crave feedback, you know, from people. And you're usually reading maybe to 10 people, you know. Mm-hmm. So polite applause, you know. You're like, okay, all right. But in these videos... you know, and it's starting with, usually it was either Jason Reberg, who was an MC for much of it, or Jameson Bales, who was also an MC for much of it, announcing the next person. And what you see is somebody getting up, and there's thunderous applause. They get up while they're reading, there's people laughing, there's people yelling out lines, you know, they're, you know. And then when they get done again, thunderous applause. You just don't, you know, no, I don't know. Most poets' videos they do is them talking into a camera and a microphone, and that's
it.
And it's because it's, you know, I mean, Saturday night, you know, in the heyday of it, I'd say we had over 100 people, which is literally as many people as we can cram into that room. And so, and they're all poets. There were some, there were a few people that were just there to listen. And so in that neighborhood, 39th Street is a great neighborhood for artists. And there's a lot of people that support us. And a woman named Becky Platt literally came in and made a snack tray for everybody.
And
tea and coffee. Just, you know, we didn't even ask her. And she just did it. And which was great. You know, every little thing, you know, Jazz Louisiana Kitchen gave us a bunch of credit. So I was able to give Jazz Bucks to a lot of these poets who came in here with, you know, change in their pocket and not much else. So they could eat. Shafley Brewery out of St. Louis gave us beer to give out, you know. So it was, you know, there was something there at least that we could try and give these people something, you know, for their time and for their effort to come out. And it worked out, I think, tremendously well. I was completely exhausted for a day and a half afterwards. But, you know, it was an amazing amount of fun, and it was a great, great event. You know, and in terms of, you know, a lot of people are already asking about next year. And, you know, first, just back off, people. Just let us breathe. Okay? Just, you know, I mean, we're the Throwdown Group, which we have rebranded, the Kansas City Small Press. Oh, God, I've already forgotten what it's called. That's what I get for changing the name of it. The Kansas City Small Press Poetry Fest. I even helped write that, and I couldn't remember it for a minute. And we're, the group is still together. It's very, very, very tentative. We're thinking about an event a year from October. Yeah, we're going to plan this for over a year now. It just takes that long to do it. Probably it'll be a different date. It's obviously a different name. And it will probably be in a different location because we just can't cram that many people into that poor bookstore anymore. Although it will be involved in some way. We'll do something there, meet and greet or something. But again, I can't really talk about it because the people that are working on it we're talking to a pretty prominent arts group here in Kansas City to get them involved, and so it's all sort of up in the air, but you know, we're working on it. We're working on it, so stay tuned. You know, at the same time, I would say, you know, anybody that is interested out there in it, just stay in touch with the Facebook page, and we're pretty good about posting and letting people know as things come, but it's very much a work in progress so far.
Very good. And a labor of much love by those of you who pulled this off, because it's huge. I mean, you have done this 2 years in a row, 3-day poetry festival with people coming in from all over the country, like you said. And so it's a wonderful, huge event that you all deserve some time to breathe. I have to ask the question if there's a little trade going on here, in that I know that Jameson Bales and Damian Rucci are doing this from east to west transition, one way, the other way. So I wonder, so is Damian going to become part of the crew organizing the next fest?
You know, I don't know. You know, Damian is awesome. Jameson was literally, I mean, there, you know, at first, Jameson was so good, and he knows everybody. So, you know, he was able to kind of, but there was a point when we're kind of like, Jameson, stop. no more people, okay? We can't fit any more people into this. And, you know, and because on my end, and this was important to everybody, but I wanted to stay on schedule as much as we could, knowing that, of course, we're not going to stay on schedule. It's not going to happen. But, you know, I, at least for myself personally, it drives me crazy when I'm, you know, I'm going to read at an event and I don't know when what time slot it is. You know, they're just like, there was one many years ago I went to in Lawrence. And I don't think it's affiliated with anything in Lawrence anymore. It was in the upstairs of a restaurant. I don't know. But what
probably
they did is
jazz house, maybe, and down to a music venue, bar venue. Anyway,
it was. It was like a storeroom. I don't know, but it was upstairs, and and everybody wrote their name on a slip of paper.
Oh,
and the guy put it in a hat. And then I'm just like, oh no, don't do that. No. And so everybody's supposed to draw the name after they go, draw the next name out. It's supposed to be the next person. So you just don't know. And I don't like that because number one, you can't really like go to the bathroom or go get, because then you might get called, you know? So you don't know. And as they got to me fairly early on, and I read something, and I'm going to look in the hat, and I can see I'm there with two other poets, Will Latham and a guy named John Bidwell. And I see Latham's name. I see his slip, you know, but I can see his name in it. So I'm like, you know, and it's Will Latham is next, you know. And I go over, and I'm like, and I'm kind of like, Just look for Johns, you know? And so, because I think if we can just do the three of us in a row, you know, then we're good. We can just enjoy the rest and just hang out, you know, and we don't have to worry. Well, Will doesn't understand what I said. So he does randomly pull it out. And literally, Bidwell was the last name pulled out of the thing.
Oh.
So we're sitting there, and you know, I love my poets, but there was one guy that got up, and he had poster board with some sort of flow chart on it. I can't, you know, I don't, the only thing I can think of, and this is really going to date me, is that there's an episode of WKRP in Cincinnati when they're trying to do a talk show and they think they have this expert that will sound great. And he comes up and he's got all these charts to show them. And they're like, it's radio, you know, we can't, you know, and I felt the same. I'm like, dude, you really should, if your poem needs a chart of some kind, you need to rethink that.
Wow.
But yeah, so we wanted to be organized at least, and that people would know about when they're going to go, so that they can go about their business, check out the town, check out the 39th Street, check out the great restaurants and such that are along there, and you know, I think it worked out pretty well. We got everybody in. We talked about, you know, some of us were going to read maybe a poem at some point, either at the beginning or the end, but, you know, if we got over, we were going to cut ourselves first, so that, you know, we weren't going to, like, take out anybody who's traveled here from, you know, Dallas or something, like Paul Konecki, who, you know, from his, he's got this great group, and it's so amazing to meet, literally, you know, a while back down at the Osage Arts Community, the artist residency program that's going down in Bell, Missouri, which John Dorsey is a big part of, and Jason Reberg is too. And they invited us down. Me and Jason Reberg went down there. 3-hour drive, Northern Ozarks, a little blurry headed from driving, standing there. You know, we finally get to these riverside ranch houses where they have people stay. They hand us some beers. We're just kind of standing there dazed. I look over, there's these two other gentlemen standing there, which turned out to be Brent Underwood and Jim Gowan from St. Louis. And they're doing the same thing. They've got a beer. They're just kind of staring out, kind of, you know, bleary-eyed and whatever. And I get this, like, Star Trek flashback to, like, the Mirror Universe thing, you know, with Spock with the goatee. Because I'm like, you know, it's us, but it's from St. Louis. And, you know, and with the throwdown, that expanded even more. Because I saw, you know, Paul Konecki's group from Dallas, the Cringeworthy Poets, the people from Pittsburgh and from St. Louis, and all that. They all, it's all different, but it's all sort of the same. And that they all have sort of versions of what we're doing in Kansas City in their city. So, you know, it was a great opportunity for everybody to get to meet each other. And the biggest thrill for me is seeing online, you know, through Facebook and stuff, all the same names from all these people all now going to all of these places. Going, you know, there was a big reading in the Deep Ellum down in Dallas, with, you know, had, you know, a bunch of people go down there. Iris Applequist went out to the reading in Portland, you know, with a couple other Kansas City posts. So it really did sort of introduce everybody.
Wonderful.
To the idea, because it's, you know, it again, like I said, I've been doing this coming up to 20 years, and for the most part, it's tiny, tiny groups of people in cities, you know, and I know there's poets in Oklahoma City, where I'm from, but I don't know who they are. I don't know where the readings are, and I wouldn't be able to probably find them very easily. But this allowed everybody to get to meet each other. And I think that was, for me, that was the biggest bonus. Like Jeanette Powers, as part of this sort of lead up to it, she did a couple of different books with the idea of getting a bunch of poets, one poem each. And she did a couple, and here, I'll read one of my ones out of here. The first one, the main one, was called Finding Zen in Cowtown. That's from a poem by Sean Pavey. And so it's 30 poems about Kansas City from 30 different poets. And it's Jeanette's just, you know, we call her Sparkle Princess, Sparkle Queen, because she has a head on her shoulders and she knows what she's doing. And, you know, we all think, well, I just want a book of all of my poetry. Well, you know what? You can sell a lot more if it's 30 poems by 30 different poets. Because we all have relatives that will bug to make them, you know, and maybe one weird groupie, you know, that, you know, everybody's got one weird groupie that, you know, you're kind of like, you're glad, but you're also kind of like, but I don't really want to ever, like, be in your house alone with you. Or anything. but I'm going to read this one out of here, and this is probably as close to a stream of consciousness poem, but if you ever sit outside 39th Street late at night, this is pretty much what it's like. It's called Untitled Number 3, because I'm really freaking clever. all right. So I'm sitting out on the sidewalk in front of Prospero's Books late at night, watching the traffic go by, beeping and honking with lights flashing like they're talking, while the people wander in and out of the bar on the corner, yuppies and bums, strippers and poets, dancing so they don't get too close, like they're magnets or something, polarized for their own protection from each other, each on a course that's evasive at best, doing laundry, getting tattoos, beer, the daily news with cigarettes and coffee, eating and walking, talking and drinking in little shops. It's a last supper out here, and each apostle's got his job to do, leaving scorch marks on the concrete, bits of paper with old numbers under empty cups. This is primordial stuff, this mulligan stew of us. Give it heat and pressure and some strange green lightning bolt, and 39th Street might sit up, scratch its ass, and mutter. And what would it say about you or me? Well, we hang on for our lives like we do every day and still are. sitting on the sidewalk, drifting down the street, like we're secret words written with invisible ink on ancient tea leaves that get scattered by celestial winds that no one ever reads.
That's fabulous, Brandon.
Yeah, well, you know, I got a lot of time on my hand, so it's what I do. But, you know, it's just a really great idea what she did, because the books help sort of be the physical presence, you know. It's at the Throwdown, we had a lot of people showed up with books. And, you know, I trade them. We trade books to each other. You know, that's what we do. It's like currency. It's like poetry currency. You know, I've got your book, you got my book, you know, and, you know, no one makes any money. But then if we did, I think we'd fall over dead from surprise if you made money off the book. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. But, and I am actually, I'm reading this Friday at the Writer's Place, in a rather, you know, again, every time, every reading, when I get asked, and I'm basically no longer doing open mics, I'm no longer doing, I'm just basically, if somebody asks me and I look at the event and I think this, what I've got would work, you know, I'll say yes. If I think I don't, I'm going to go, well, I don't think this, what I'm doing would fit, you know, with you. You know, if you're doing a hardcore pro-feminist thing, yeah, they're going to get mad at me, you know. So this is not going to work. But
you say that, and one of your dear friends is Jeanette Powers, and, you know, we know that you're not opposed to hardcore feminists. Just saying.
No, I'm not. But, you know, any group of people quick to, like, want to find something offensive? Well, my poems are filled with offensive things, intentionally. So it's like it's not aimed at you, you know. It's just again, it's my whole embrace the absurd philosophy about you know, life, and that, you know, it's you got to look at the ugly stuff and try and see why it's there, and not just ignore it because it's, you know, you don't want to or it's inconvenient, but. But I am reading at the it's the Riverfront Readers series. It's been going on since '70s. Started with Phil Miller, who passed several years ago, who I knew for many, many years. Man really liked his cats. And
I don't think I want to know any more about that, Brandon. Just let it go.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, I'm off the track already.
Kind of scared me there.
Yeah. But this Friday, June 9th, I'm reading, and I just want to get these other people's names in. I don't know them. They're writers. I think there's one's a fiction, and the other's a fiction and nonfiction. Brian Shaver and Diane Willey, and then I'm reading poetry in the middle. I don't know why. But I love the fact that if you look on the Facebook page, you know, they put up photos of the three of us, and Brian's photo, really great photo, great smile, great author photo with the, you know, just generic model background, you know.
I hate those.
Yeah. Diane's got the same thing. Great smile also. And it is. Mine is me smoking a cigarette and reading cartoons outside a liquor store.
I love it. I want to see real people. I don't want to see those weird poses. When people send me those pictures to post about, you know, the show that they're doing, it's like, I don't want that shit. Let me cruise your Facebook pic, you know, and find a good picture.
Right. Yeah.
I want real life.
Yeah. No, I do enjoy those from, it's been interesting to try and find. I have two photos of myself I like in terms of posting for events, posting for books, and neither one really represents how I look very well. So that's, you know, it's in each one I've got weird hair going on in some way or another. So
I'm looking right now because I've got Thieves, Pharaohs, and Mexican Daredevils, that book of yours. right beside me, and on the back of it, the cover, the author photo, it's like there's some weird universe glowing onto you. I'm not sure what's going on.
That was at a Halloween reading. A guy I know took that photo, and literally what it looks like I'm staring into the Lochnar from heavy metal. Nobody knows what that reference is, but it's actually just one of those clip-on reflective lights, and it's behind me. So it looks like I'm staring into something.
Yes.
And smile, and I'm not. It's just a random effect. I think Reberg, who helped edit that with me, might have been the one that pushed for that because he liked it. So, yeah, you know.
Bizarre author picks. That tells us so much more, though, about people. I like them. This show is that we're recording right now. People are going to hear it for the first time on Thursday the 8th, and the very next day, Friday, June 9th, at 8 o'clock at the Writer's Place, is where you're going to be doing this sandwich event with poetry between two people who you've never met.
yep, that sums it up.
Sounds great.
Yep. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Come back to something about some guy who liked his cats too much who started this series. I don't know about that part.
Oh, yeah. Phil Miller, great guy. He was a great guy. He's much missed.
Man, oh, man. Weirdness. I want to hear you say something about robots. What do you got to say about robots, Brandon?
I like them. I welcome our robot overlords when they finally show up. Which would seem to be pretty soon now. And I'd probably prefer if they'd just go ahead and take over. It couldn't be worse. So, you know.
Do you create robots?
No, not so much. But I do love old technology. I'm messing with hooking two VHS recorders together to try and dupe some tapes to make some weird effect. And I've got a variety of like equipment from some of the projection rooms I've worked in, old style microphones. I just love old technology. I love the old 35mm cameras. I've got several of those, and it's funny because some of that is actually coming back.
Mm-hmm.
That people are starting to like this old technology and they appreciate, I have a camera from probably the 1950s, still works fine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, pick your cell phone. You think it's going to be working, 87 years from now?
No.
Not now. So I think there is some appreciation of that. Anyway, I like it. It's something I enjoy. But
that's very cool. Very cool. Well, I'm thinking we're about halfway through this hour. I'm having a blast. I need to thank you, Brandon Whitehead, for doing this for me. I needed this.
Hey, anytime. Yeah, I got nothing else to do. So.
And we're going to take a break here from a couple of the businesses that are sponsors of LawrenceHits.com. And as much as I'm enjoying hearing and talking with Brandon Whitehead, I realize that our listeners wouldn't be included if it were not for the producer of the show, Daniel Smith. So big shout out to Daniel Smith for letting people hear this and having as much fun as I am. And then we'll be right back with more Talk With Me and today's guest, Brandon Whitehead from Kansas City. So listeners, welcome back. This is Marcia Epstein on Talk With Me. And today my guest is the delightful, entertaining, and very productive Brandon Whitehead. And Brandon, you've kind of been stringing me along behind the scenes with something about something super secret special that you might give a glimpse of in this conversation. So I'm going to ask, is now a time when you can tantalize us about this news?
Well, this is my introduction to my secret project I have been working on and off for a while now. It's called Project 4000. There's no reason for that at all. And in fact, there's really no reason for the project to be done at all, and it may just be a horribly bad idea. But basically, what I want to do is I want to take, I'm combining two of my biggest loves, poetry and spoken word, and cheesy 1980s VHS bad sci-fi movies. And basically, at some point this summer, I'll let people know, I'm probably going to do a sort of a soft open invite only for the first project, which is called, there's like 8 subtitles to this. I've gone completely insane with this. But essentially, the idea is that in the future of 1982, supercomputers have taken over the world. Anybody who is deemed different, a dissident, or with, you know, unusual ideas, is a prisoner. And they must go in front of a supercomputer and prove their worth, or their mind is erased.
Ew. And so,
yes. And so essentially, it starts off with cheesy sci-fi narration. Let's just say a prop I have built, which is a bit absurd, turns itself on. And then there is basically a poetry reading. Typically, I think it's just going to be the one poet. And then at the end, the supercomputer acts as sort of the MC / narrator. And then at the end, basically, there is a judgment as to whether or not the poet, you know, is allowed to go free, or whether they're going to have their mind erased. And my hopeful goal is to be able to set this up so that I can take it to different venues. The prop I have built is very large, and so I probably hurt myself that. But I just wanted to do something different in terms of the poetry reading that really kind of, you know, the whole supercomputer thing is sort of a dodge. It sets up the poet, and then they can do what they want, so they don't have to, like, learn a script or anything, and then they can just enjoy it themselves, because I'm there, a.k.a. the supercomputer, to sort of, you know, help prod, help, you know, ask questions about, so it becomes both a poetry reading where they're reading the poetry, but then they can also talk about it, you know, they can talk about, you know, and this is, I'm not going to say that I kind of used some of, like, the sound effects of various computers and robots throughout 1980s sci-fi history, but I did. And so that, you know, my goal is to make it as enjoyable for the audience as it is for the poet, and to try and make it something different. And it starts off with all the lights turned off, and it ends with all the lights turned off. So there you go. That's as far as I've written it to now. There's more to it, but I love reading cheesy narration. I've done some comedy work in the past and some improv comedy work, and so I'm just kind of using that, and I'm putting myself into the position of being the facilitator for the poet, but at the same time, I'm not there. I'm the voice of the supercomputer, but it just amuses me that if I do it right, people might sit there and actually start to kind of think that this thing's actually working and not just glued together with a hot glue gun and a bunch of LED lights and Christmas lights that I found, and actually start to think that this is person is, you know, talking, arguing, reading to a blinky computer thing. And I'm going to put up more information on it. I'll make, you know, I have a Facebook page. I'm getting ready to do it. I'm getting ready to do a little preview video of the supercomputer itself. in all its glory, and possibly catching on fire. It's not OSHA safe. I'm pretty sure it's not, but you know, because I built the thing. But you know, it's I just wanted to do something on top of after doing the throwdown. Uh-huh. I just amused me. I had this prop I'd started to build for a different project. In fact, the whole Project 4000 came out because originally it was called the Joketron 4000. And that never worked. And so it's been sitting in my basement forever. And wow. I was down there, you know, and killing crickets. And I thought, you know what? I could try and use that in terms of being an MC instead of the MC just being, you know, one of us walking up to the microphone. Uh-huh. I could do a whole different thing where it would be actually a sort of a conversation, a somewhat incoherent conversation because you're talking to a 1980s supercomputer, which doesn't exist. And, but you know, either people will get it or they won't, you know, uh-huh. That's one of those things. I think that it has some possibilities for being something different. And, you know, that's what I go for.
Yeah. So I have two little informational questions related to that. One uh-huh. is, are you setting up a new Facebook page specifically for Project 4000 for people to follow this?
Yes, there will okay. be one that I'll put up. And if they let me, I'll link it off of the Small Press Poetry Fest, and I'll send you the info too on it. So you know, and again, I'm putting together a little video right now.
Yeah.
Just that either people will look at and laugh, or they'll go, "What the hell was that?" And and which is good. It's all good.
Yeah.
And it is good. And but yes, and it'll be up here before long, and then again I'm going to do probably an invite only first show just to find out whether or not I've lost my mind and this doesn't make any sense, or whether or not, you know, people enjoy it and the poet enjoys it, so you know, we'll see. And then with any luck I can, when we have other people come here, we can do other episodes, because I have a whole sort of episodic plot plan to the idea of, you know, different poets, and there's even, you know, whether they're going to beat the computer or whether the computer is going to beat them, and then there's, you know, a whole possible other storyline going on, if it works, that could have a thrilling conclusion, you know.
Awesome. But, so do you, I know what you've said, that your first showing is going to be special invitation only. Do you have a timeline that you're projecting at this point when you're likely to have the first public event?
You know, it's probably going to, I'm thinking the end of July.
Cool, that's it.
I have to see about being able to move this thing and how long it takes me to set it up. But I'm trying to simplify it, but at the same time, it's big, Marcia. It's really big, okay? And I have to be able to, because essentially I'm hiding inside it as the voice of this supercomputer. probably I should bring a fire extinguisher back there with me. I'm thinking the end of July. It may very well be at Prospero's Books upstairs. But again, the first one is probably going to be an invite only, just so I don't have to answer questions about people going, "What is this?" You know, and you know, if it's mostly people that know me that I respect, then they already know. It's like it's Brandon's just doing that thing. So just don't worry.
I think it sounds amazing. I think it has so many different levels of meaning and will be entertaining at the same time. And it like this appeal to the sci-fi nerds around and
Just
so many different audiences, and such a parallel to our freaking federal government.
Well, and the one thing that annoys me the most about contemporary poetry, in terms of either on the page or on the stage, is pomposity. It just, that is the type of poetry that I find boring. Mm-hmm. Where this is sort of, as the poet, I can truly see the true nature of what beauty is. And blah, blah. No, you can't. It doesn't make any sense. Rieberg has this comment he makes about poets, and I very much agree to it, is that, today a really good poet is like a really good ham radio operator or a really good Civil War reenactor. Within the community, that's great, but outside of it, it's just, that the scale falls to nothing, I know, you're a fan, but I do think that if you look in the vernacular of popular culture, when you bring up poetry or poets, most likely people are going to think of that movie with the guy from SNL, I Married an Axe Murderer, where he's a beret-wearing, cigarette-smoking, black turtleneck-wearing poet who's, waves his arms a lot, And for most people that have never been to a reading or anything like that, that's what they think it is, so... Maybe through Project 4000, I can trick a few people into coming who wouldn't go because I'm not calling it a poetry reading. I'm calling it something else. Uh-huh. And so maybe we can sneak in some poetry, around the, it's the pill inside the peanut butter you're trying to give your dog, and so if we could, if maybe I can sneak in some, and so, people won't really realize I just sat through a poetry reading and I enjoyed myself, that's kind of something, because I really do feel, and if you watch my video at I read it at the Throwdown, I was the last one Friday night, I give this little speech at the end, and basically what I say is that, and this is something I do fundamentally believe, during that weekend, most everybody in this city and across the country watch television. Many years in the future, when they maybe can't make a lot of new memories, they've just got the ones they have, they're not going to remember the weekend they watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
But we remember these types of weekends. We remember these types of events. And I do think we will get to a point where people will get tired of walking around staring at their phone and want to actually go to an event where it's real people doing real things.
Yes.
And again, with the right energy, with the right time and the right organization, a poetry reading can be that and more. It can be something, many of the younger poets I've met started writing poetry because they stumbled into a poetry reading. They didn't even know, or a friend invited them, and they didn't know what it was going to be. And, they got there, and suddenly they realized there's this whole sort of, subculture of what we're doing. Because, this writing poetry, doing books, getting up and reading them, it's not just writing. It's not just performance. It's not just trying to, develop skills to know how to lay out a book, or what's good, what's not good in terms of what you can do and what you can't do. So it's sort of all of those things, but until you see it for yourself, I think a lot of people just don't really, they don't know what they're missing. And so, trying to put this stuff together, and make it into an event that's friendly, not to us, because we already read to each other all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, virtually every one of the regular poetry readings, it's just poets. There might be a few, but it's pretty much just us. And that's fine. And I really, you know, I do enjoy those. And because your audience is your peers, you know. So, but I think we'd all like to maybe have occasionally an audience, you know. Be in a room where at least half the people aren't just there waiting to read. They're there, you know, to listen. And, you know, and like... talking to all of those poets and stuff, and there was a point where I was sitting at a table at Frickin' Frack with R.A. Washington, George Wallace, Paul Konecki, John Dorsey, I can't remember who else, and you know, and we are all just full of shit in terms of, like, telling stories about poetry this, poetry that, I read here, I read with that guy, I knew that guy, you know, and, you know, I told my story about, you know, for some reason ending up reading at an illegal strip club at midnight and then going outside when I'm done to have a cigarette, and there's a guy selling guns out of the trunk of his car. And I asked him, well, do you think the people that own this place are okay with that? And he goes, yeah, they're okay. I own this place. So there you go. You know, so that's, you know, get a read poetry to a strip club owner selling guns out of his car. So, you know, so we all did. And that was amazing fun. And it was a great time to get together to do all of that. I think that's really what makes it as much worth it as anything for us to do this is to get to enjoy each other's company and get to enjoy, you know, the work. And it leads to a lot of, again, those other crossovers. You know, Ejno Martin did a book with Damian Ruccia from New Jersey, who's a great guy. And he came here and we told all these stories about this guy, Victor Smith. Victor Smith was a gentleman we knew, died, a while ago. And he was just, he came out of nowhere. He was, you know, an older black man that was one step from homelessness. He was the best poet I've ever heard. I mean, and I'm not just talking like he was great. He had a trach too. So he had a hard time talking. So it wasn't like, you know, he was, you know, this great booming voice. But everything he did on the page and when he got up front was just so great. But, you know, so we tell all these stories. Damien wrote a great poem about this, about hearing the voice of the ghost of Victor Smith out on 39th Street, even though he'd never heard him because, you know, he's dead. So we actually found a video of Victor Smith that we had done many years ago for this little documentary called The Prospero's Pit Poetry Show. And we were able to pull that off that and put it up on the website. So we were able to actually let people finally hear Victor Smith read a poem. And so, you know, that was really, it was really great. And I think that, yeah, it has led to a lot of people crossing over and doing collaborative stuff. And I think that that's one of the best parts about it is that, you know, I see almost every week now another event with people from one city or another going, and it actually is turning into sort of tours of groups of people meeting, going to, you know, oh, we're going to go here. You want to go there? We'll give you a ride. Then, you know, we got a place you can crash, you know, that, so that it's not, it gets people out of their town and it gets them moving around, and that gets, that stirs up the pot, that gets more people doing more things that you get to introduce it to, which, I mean, my God, I'm almost hitting 20 years, I am so sick of my own stuff. I have read it so many times. I am so tired of it. But when I'm reading to people that haven't heard it, that it's new to, suddenly it's new to me, you know, and that's just how it works. Suddenly I get excited about wanting to read it, and I find a different way to read it that I didn't think of, you know, or see it from a different angle that I didn't think of. And that's really important, because you can get stagnant if you're just in the same small group of poets and you're all doing the same thing and you're just reading the same way over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It's like a bad relationship. You know, it's like, it's just, you know, you got to get out, you got to break it up, then go meet other poems.
Well, yeah. and as you say that, it was making me remember. I get a weekly newsletter from this artist Austin Kleon, and I guess it was a week or two ago, he had this piece on poets finding their voice, and he had this quote from Billy Collins, a poet whose name at least a lot of people will recognize, even if they don't know a lot of poetry, or look him up, folks.
Oh, sure.
Billy Collins. And he said, and this is, I just pulled up the article again, "Let me reassure you that it's not that mysterious, finding your voice. Your voice has an external source. It is not lying within you. It is lying in other people's poetry." So that urge to experience other people's works, not to be working in a vacuum, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big, you know, it's I put it like, you know, writing is, in a way, I think of it as like having a toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't want a toolbox with just hammers. You know, I mean, yeah, you can hammer a lot of stuff, but that's it. You know, the more tools you have in the toolbox, in other words, mm-hmm. the more you read or the more you listen to what other people are doing. And, you know, it's a lot of times people sound like, well, you mean copying what they're doing? Well, no, but it's a different energy.
Right.
And you can look at that and then you can find that in yourself to try and do something. When I first started writing poetry, my poetry was so bland and it was so mathematical, and I was trying to make double entendres and all this stuff, and it wasn't until I accidentally, like, made funny lines
mm-hmm.
that I suddenly realized, well, that's not what I want to do. I don't want to do this, you know, and academically people liked it, you know, because it's kind of, you know, the sort of it's showing the skill without really offending anyone. And then I realized I kind of want to offend some people, you know, it's not, you know, there's nothing wrong with that,
offending people is a way of getting people to think, you know, and I think that it's essential that we get jarred out of our complacency, and being offended sometimes is the way.
Yeah, and I don't mean, when I say, like, being offensive, I don't mean, like, trying to shock people by bringing up really negative, nasty, bad things. I mean just this sort of a sarcasm and, you know, an attitude of I don't give a shit about, mm-hmm. you know, this thing, and you know, I'd rather just be an old man sitting on the porch smoking a cigarette, drinking whiskey, and making fun of people while they walk by, you know. Yeah. But, and I wanted to throw out one more thing about another thing Jeanette Powers did. She also did a book called Prompts, which was this, she basically sent it out, and again, it's a whole bunch of different poems by a whole bunch of different people. And she sent out prompts to a bunch of people, and she sent me one in sort of, you know, sending them to all these different people. And, you know, I know that's a regular exercise in poetry. I hate it. I couldn't do it. But but I did one for her, so I could finish up here. I'll read this one last little poem. It's called Things Not to Do Unless You Are Dead. Drive while blindfolded. Trust a pack of spider monkeys. Write a poem while drunk or under the influence of some strange smoked Nicaraguan tote gland. It will seem magnificent until you sober up. Pray when you need to run. Run when you need to pray. You could run faster. Believe that love makes the world go round. It's just physics, dumbass. Yell, fuck that alligator. Then jump in a pond with that alligator. Burn the Bhagavad Gita at midnight under an ash tree. Get in the 12 items or less checkout lane, counting 10 cans of cat food as one item. That's not really bad. It just pisses me off. Yell, watch this as you're lighting the fuse. Get your directions from Reberg. Gamble with a man in a top hat. Roll an 18 when you need a 20. Sell insurance to a gun fanatic. But never, ever put plastic flowers on tombstones. Why is that, you say? You know why. But you brought them anyway, didn't you? But seriously, stay away from spider monkeys. Bunch of dicks. So, you know, I figured we'll just end on a high note there, you know.
I love it. And I'm going to share that when I was a kid living in the Texas panhandle, my brothers and I, living there with our mom, our father in the Southern California area, sent us home from one visit with a spider monkey.
Oh, no. No. It's just the name, spider and monkey combined. That sounds horrible, you know? It just tells you what you need to know, you know? Like if you were at the zoo and you walk by this big display and it says spider monkeys and you can't see them, that's bad. You know, this is bad. God knows what they're up to, but yeah.
Okay, man, oh man, who knew where we were going to go today? So I am such a big fan of telling people and doing this myself, buy the books. So let's remind people and mention a little bit of leads on. So you mentioned a couple collections of that Jeanette Powers organized. I mentioned your book, Thieves, Pharaohs, and Mexican Daredevils. Let's tell our listeners again. So how do they buy these books? Because poets need to pay rent and eat and stuff like that too.
Yeah. Well, you can email me. It's the easiest way. Okay. It's King in Yellow, KingInYellow.bw@gmail.com, or contact me on Facebook, or through all of the other poets who didn't get a copy of my book can contact me through Facebook or through previously the Throwdown and is now the Small Press Poetry Fest page. Through Prospero's Books has copies of Finding Zen in Cowtown and the Prompts book, which both have a poem of mine in them as well. And I'm sure if you contact Jeanette Powers and or also through the Kansas City Small Press Poetry Fest page on Facebook, they can get you a copy. And there you go.
And I'm saying, people, buy the books and you will be happy. You will be just thrilled that not only did you get to hear Brandon read a couple things in this conversation today, but then you can look at him on paper too and savor them and share them with your friends and be the cool kids because you are supporting local arts because local art is important to our well-being. Brandon Whitehead, thank you so much. I had a blast. I know our listeners have enjoyed listening to us too. I hope that people who hear this premiere will also be people who head over to the Writer's Place on Friday, June 9th, the day after this show premieres, for the Riverfront Reading, where you will be one of three readers. And then go out and have fun. Go to Prospero's Books, people. Go check out what's going on there. Go to the Uptown Arts Bar. Those are great places to start to experience some of the wonders of poetry that happens in Kansas City. And again, thank you, Brandon.
Thank you, Marcia.
And so long to our listeners.